I'm Melinda Garish, and I'm your host, and I'm the owner of Cutting Up Stables. My husband, Mike, and I are here in Shirley, Indiana, which is 30 miles east of Indianapolis. If you're in our area, we'd love to have you stop by. Karen, we've got a lot of questions this evening to discuss, and are you ready to get started?
You bet.
Okay. The topics tonight, Karen, that we're going to be talking about is writing with a group, taking the correct lead, and overcoming fear to canter, stopping your horse, and using spurs. Karen, when we were in Illinois, I noticed how many people's lives you touch, and there was a testimony here that I'd like to share with all the readers and listeners here tonight, and this is from Arlene in San Diego. And it says, "Dear Karen, I want to thank you for being there with your monthly teleseminars. They were the support I relied on to navigate through all the information, the good and the bad, and unfortunately opinionated with no backing to support it. About restarting my rescue national show horse, who was so afraid of humans, it took a month of practically camping out in his stall. I was inspired to try it after your story about the man and the Zorse you told when answering my question on the teleseminar, and then another month of basic groundwork before he was considered trainable, even by professional national horsemanship people I had helped me. I watched your beginning DVDs, and that saved my beaten-down confidence and negative feedback about the horse. I'm proud to say he is now happily getting back under saddle, follows us like a dog, and loves and trusts my 10-year-old daughter more than us adults. Your philosophy about women and horses really hit a nerve, and suddenly it all made sense, and I stopped feeling so insecure, despite my having a lot of horse experience in my past. Thank you, Karen, for taking the time to do the teleseminars. I'm glad I didn't listen to all those who told me to give up. The horse is dangerous, and he's too much horse for you. I have found a friend for life, and it's Velocity, my beautiful horse, Arlene in San Diego. So I thought that was neat, and I thought you'd want to hear that. Okay, are you ready to get started with the questions then, Karen?
Sure.
Okay. There was two questions that we're going to kind of combine, and I'm going to read both of them, and they seem to be kind of in the same category, so I thought we could kind of work on both of them. One of them is from Georgette out of Missouri, and the other one is Joanne. The first one, it says, "Hello, I own a 13-year-old Morgan gelding. I have had him for 10 years. We trail ride a lot, including some competition trail rides. He is great on the trail, although if we ride in a large group, such as an organized trail ride, 30 to 300 horses, he seems to lose his mind, especially if there are fox trotters on the ride moving at a faster pace. He begins prancing, snorting, pawing if you try to stop, dancing sideways, and acting like he's lost his mind. I could put him in front, which seems to be what he wants, but that won't help either. Place him in the back, turn circles, whatever you want to try, no change. This is okay for a mile or two, but by the end of an eight-hour day, I am ready to scream, and sometimes I do. People ride by and ask if he's a stallion. Not that I think a stallion should act that way either. Truly, he is normally a great horse. He's also a problem trying to ride in the local 4th of the July parade. When everyone is standing still, he is fine, but the moment the feet start moving on the pavement, he loses it again, prancing and dancing on the pavement, jeopardizing both our safety and safety of his others. Needless to say, I don't take him there anymore, but we are the 4-H leaders in our town, and it would be fun to ride with the kids in the parade. Any suggestions with riding with a group?" The other part of that question, and then Karen will get back with us, is from Joanne, and it says, "What exercises can I practice with my horse that will help stop the buck at the beginning of a ride when we move off into a canter, especially as a group? He only bucks out of excitement, not pain or protest. I'd like others to be able to ride him safely, but they seem cautious due to his bucks." So those are the two questions, and I think I've still lost Karen. I can talk to you a little bit about some clinics. Karen's going to be holding a clinic here in Illinois in October. I don't have those dates in front of me, but I know that there's a few extra spots left open if someone would like to join there in Illinois. Also, if you're in Indiana or in our area, we're going to be hosting a clinic October the 23rd, 24th, and 25th, and love to have you join you. It's going to be here at our place at Cutting Up Stables, which is 30 miles east of Indianapolis.
But let me answer this as long as we get a good signal, but if this keeps cutting like this, we'll just take the alternative approach. When a horse gets more connected to the other horse than to the individual, What the person needs to do is, what that says is that your role in the leadership position is very limited, or it's okay at home but not away. So a lot of times I describe these relationships, what a lot of people have with their horses is what I consider a conditional relationship with their horse. So it's okay inside the arena but not outside. It's okay with a, you know, two or three horses, but not 10 or more, and definitely not in a parade situation. So, you know, sometimes in parade situations, you can have the horses, you know, you can to a calm horse and have your horse pick up on that energy. You can use this connection between herd animals to your advantage. But to just say, okay, now you and I are in a parade, and, you know, here's what we're going to do today. The horse says, well, I'm sorry, but I didn't sign up to ride in a parade today. You know, and as much as you want to ride in the parade with the 4-H'ers, that horse may need much more leadership than another horse. So the number one thing with horses is to be safe. That's the number one thing. Even if you take your horse to the parade and walk your horse through the parade, you can still go with the 4-H'ers. And what a great example for an adult to say, you know what, safety is more important than riding this horse through a parade. I'm going to walk through the parade. You know, if you have a little one on the back of the horse, you wouldn't go, okay, Susie, here you go. Good luck in the parade. You'd lead that little one because maybe the horse is okay, but the little one's not prepared. So if you think of a horse like that, as a small child, that you want them to have good experience, you want confidence. You know, for goal, you know, riding this parade and say, you know, here's a situation and we'll adjust to this. Number one is safety. So the thing to understand with horses, it gets back to who is in the leadership position. Because if you establish leadership with the horse, again, first on the ground, I can't emphasize that enough. If you don't have leadership on the ground, you're sure not going to get it up on the horse's back. That is the easiest place and the first place to establish leadership with a horse. Then, when you understand that principle through, you know, doing different exercises on the ground, establishing your personal space, you know, those kinds of basic things, then you take it up on the horse's back and learn how to reestablish leadership when there's not a challenging environment, when you're not in a challenging situation. So, say in the clinic I did here this last week in Grand Junction, Colorado, at Alomar Arena, there was a woman there, and before the clinic even started, she said, you know, I've got to tell you, I have a Morgan, and you know, Morgans are different, and this Morgan's feet, you know, has to move all the time. She won't stand still. By noontime on the first day, I asked everybody, you know, before we took our lunch break, you know, what did you gain so far? She was blown away. She said, look at my horse. She was just standing there. And she just, in her mind, just said, well, she's a Morgan, and so, you know, her feet are going to move, and this is how she's always been her entire life. But what she was really saying, what she didn't realize, is she didn't know how to respond to that behavior from a position of leadership to say, unless I ask you to move your feet, just don't keep your feet still. And sometimes that's a very simple thing to think you're asking a horse, and a horse should be able to do that. But when conditions change, and this horse was in a strange place, different horses, strange horses, horses were in motion, but she learned how to request a specific behavior with her horse. And that's what is missing oftentimes. And then you can learn that in a safe environment where it's not very challenging, and then gradually get more challenging. Another woman in the same clinic at the end of the clinic said, well, what do I do? You know, when I ride with 5 or more horses, my horse goes, you know, bonkers out there. And I said, well, here's what you do. You know, and she understood that she had some new skill sets to work with, you know, turning her horse and bending her horse and those kinds of things. But I said, you call 5 of your good friends and say, hey, you guys, I'll buy the pizza if you'll come with me and I have a little project. And then start having, you know, sometimes you got to ask a group of people to say, hey, stop for a minute. Just stop. Now let's go back to the barn. Now let's go away from the barn. Now let's go back. Because what you're fighting is the horse getting into a herd dynamic with a group of horses that are all in a pattern of go out, come back. You know, that's what most people ask from their horse on a trail ride. Go out, you know, enjoy the view, come back. And so horses get into a pattern, and that pattern starts working against you. So I said, do you have, you know, five people that would do that for you? And she said, sure I do. And I said, great. So just skip the trail ride and just say, hey, I'm working on a project. Can I get this a little bit better and start chipping away at that behavior? Again, you replace old behavior with new behavior. And the one piece to understand, the engine of the horse is in the hindquarters. If you do not have influence of the hindquarters, and I use influence rather than control because control is an illusion, really, but if you don't have complete and utter influence, unquestioning influence on the hindquarters, then that horse will use the hindquarters against you when their mind says, I have more connection with the other horses than with you. So leadership up on the horse's back is taking the hindquarters away. And there are times with Brigante that I will take the hindquarters away. He'll make the assumption. He'll say, you know what, we're going to go over to that group of people, teach in a clinic, let's just hustle up and we'll get over there and I'll get to stand there and hang out. You know, he gets that in his mind sometimes to just take off without my asking. And there are times when I'll reach down and I will just take his hindquarters away and say, hey, who's driving this tugboat? And he'll go, oh, sorry, my bad. You know, what's the big deal? You're going to go over there anyway, which is true. But I'd rather have all those people in the clinic wait rather than sacrifice my horsemanship with my horse. So even though those people are waiting for me, and Brigante says, well, I'll get you over there, let's go. If I went along with that, then I've deferred leadership to him. And every time you do that, I give that example, you know, how many times does it take to give a kid a candy bar in a grocery store before you have a problem? So in that situation, if I went, well, I got to get back over there, everybody's waiting for me, here goes my horse, he's taken off faster than I'm asking him to, if I hadn't fixed that, nipped that in the bud right there, then I would have been dealing with a bigger problem next time and next time and next time. So horsemanship isn't about training a horse and having this horse be the, you know, little angel, you know, halo over the ears, you know, never challenge you. It's about developing your skill set so that you can respond appropriately and effectively in any given situation. But if you just took a horse and said, hey, we're going on a trail ride with 50 people today without the foundation, and not just coming to a three-day clinic or watching a couple of videos, it's practicing it. It's challenging it. It's starting with, you know, three people and five people, 10 people, and say, okay, I'm going to help this horse develop more confidence. Because when a horse gets more connected to the other horses than to you, it's because they've lost their confidence in you and your communication. And that's just an indicator that there's limitations in your skill and ability to communicate effectively with the horse. So it's kind of a long answer. I wish I could tell you, oh, just take the hindquarters away and everything will be rainbows and butterflies. It doesn't work that way. There's too many considerations. There's too many factors. And there are conditions that I'll get into with my horse where my horse says, hey, this is beyond my skill set, and I've got to go back to square one and reestablish leadership of that horse. I've got to know the stages to go back to the very, very foundation where that problem can lie and rebuild it again. So it's not just, you know, fixing a horse. There are no quick fixes. Bigger bits, tie downs, things like that, they don't fix those problems. They can mechanically look at a horse, their physiology, but you want to learn how to do it, change their mind mentally, emotionally, so that their body will follow. And that's where the confidence and their ability to understand what it is that you want. And the only way I know how to do that is to sit in a clinic and start with videos. And if those don't work for you, you know, it's like the email that Melinda just read for, if it doesn't work, I'll give you your money back, you know. And I'm just that confident that every weekend I have a group of people that just think, oh, well, it's the horse, and this horse, that's what he's like. But it's because we don't have the skill set to communicate what it is that we do want with a horse. And that's what I offer to people. So I wish I could give you a quick fix and tell you the secret bit or something to fix that, but there just isn't one. If anybody tells you there is one, you know, I just haven't found that to be true.
Okay. Okay. Karen, I think you're coming in good, so I think we should continue. Is that okay?
Okay. Yeah, that's great.
Okay. All right. Well, this question is from Deanne, and it says, hi, Karen. I've had such a difficult time getting my mare to consistently take the correct lead. She seems to be getting it for the right lead, but the left lead is difficult to get when I'm riding. When she is being lunged, she goes correctly, and when my daughter rides her, who is only 10 and very lightweight, she usually takes the correct lead. But for me, I seldom get her to take the left lead, and it always takes a lot of repetition. I tilt her nose in and ask, but she throws her outside shoulder forward. I know this is hard to diagnose without seeing it, but do you have any suggestion? She has been checked for soundness and is fine. Thanks, Deanne.
So leads are in the hindquarters. That's where the first beat of the three-beat gait of a lope. We're going to talk about a lope, which is different than gallop. Gallop has a four-beat gait. So a lope, it's a three-beat gait. The first beat on a lead, the first beat is the right hind foot. Okay? Then the second beat is the diagonal pair, which is the left and right front. 2 feet land at the same time. And the beat of three-beat gait is the front. And that's what people call left lead. And people really tend to focus on the front feet of the horse because that's where they can tell from getting in the saddle. So, but what happens becomes very challenging to people. Am I breaking up?
You are breaking up.
So if you can think about the lead originating in the hindquarters, that often can help people. You know, a really nice thing to do is to go into an area such as a rowing pen and don't worry about touching the horse's mouth or face at all. And just allow that horse to pick up a can and care which lead they're on. Because if the horse is loose in the round pen and it's picking up the left lead, that's what they'll probably be do as long as the person stays out of the way. And we talk about this here in Colorado with my good friend Dan Moyer, and I study from him as many chances as I get, so I'm here as a student. And we're talking about getting out of the way of the horse so the horse can do their job more effectively. So if a horse can go left lead is round and free stitching, what's so what the person needs to do is to get out of the way of the horse. Just ask if they stay out of the horse's way. The horse picks up the right lead. Who cares? Transform down and use the outside rein, the one closest. You're going around to the left. Use the rein close to the wall. Use the right leg to push the hip out. If the hip is in a position where the right leg is going to strike first, the right hind is going to strike first, then the left hind right front will strike second and the left front will strike third. Then, voila, you're on a left lead. So it's more about positioning the hip than the shoulders and the head. So I'll give you a good example. A good friend of mine put strings on the back of his daughter's pony because the pony didn't want to go and the daughter wanted the horse to canter. When she would lean back and spank with the string in the right hand, so she had two strings off the back of the saddle on either side. When she'd reach back and pick up the string on the right side and spank, then the horse would take a left lead. It would take a left lead. And then drop down to trot, you know, little lazy pony is trotting along. And this little girl would reach back with her left hand and spank the left hip. The horse would take the right lead. And this is with nothing. I don't think this little girl was putting a leg on and doing any of this, 15 different instructions to take a correct lead. So if you can understand the dynamics of the horse and that the origination of the lead is in the hip, then get out of the way of the front of the horse. And if anything, just transition down, push that hip into the direction that you want the lead to take, and then transition the horse up into that lead. But that's what I would do in that situation is I would simulate as much as possible what that horse needs to get out of its way so it could do what it can do naturally. If all those conditions, the horse can take a left lead with the daughter, free lunging, all of those things, there's something in your physiology that's getting in the way of the horse being able to do that. So if you can kind of think about it that way, and I don't know if you and your daughter use the same saddle, but you want to rule out anything mental, emotional, or physical. So if it's something physical, if you change saddles and you use a different saddle, it could be that saddle, sometimes trees are broken and people don't know it. Trees can be broken in the saddle and it's hard to tell. A tree can be lopsided. A tree can be warped. So it could be something physical. I wouldn't say it would be physical with teeth or in the horse's physiology because the horse is picking up the left leg under different conditions. So that kind of rules out a physiological reason for this. So that's probably the only thing I would look for, what's different. And so it's either the saddle or your position and how you're taking the lead. So if anything, when you're taking the left lead, lean back and, you know, imagine that little girl with her pony. If you were to spank the right hindquarters, that whole front left end would be opened up to take that left lead. So that's why horsemanship, if you can look at it from the big picture, you're always looking at what's natural to the horse, what's the natural movement of the horse, and you learn to get in time with that because right now you're out of sync going to the left. And so when the horse takes the left lead, you get out of the way, then you'll get into a situation where your body can start feeling what the left lead feels like. Then you'll be able to build on that and start getting in position to help that horse get in the left lead once your body knows in its muscle memory what a left lead even feels like. So I hope that explains that process. It's a real neat little way to do that. Another piece of it that you can do is get in time with posting. And this is kind of the hard thing on a teleseminar. I can't always tell somebody's ability if you're familiar with posting. Posting the trot, everybody talks about rise and fall with the one on the wall. So if you're talking about a trot, both pairs, diagonal pairs of feet are moving at the same time. It's a two-beat gait. So the right hind left front are striking at the same time, and the left hind right front are striking at the same time. And so if you're posting the trot, you're sitting one of those beats and then standing the other beat. Then sitting and standing, sitting and standing, sitting and standing. So that's where the rise and fall with the one on the wall, which is talking about the front feet rising. So if you're going to the left, you're going to rise when the right front foot is in the air. That's the beat you're going to stand on. You're going to sit when the right front foot is on the ground. The left front foot's in the air. That's the second beat. So if you get to where you're posting like that, and I want to explain this a little bit differently, because, again, the beat originates in the hindquarters, but most people focus on the front feet. If you get it in the hindquarters, you have a feel to the horse, because a horse can change in the front. A horse can pick up a lead in the front, and they call it dragging the hind lead or cross-firing, but if get it to originate in the hindquarters, the front feet usually follow. They don't have to, but usually, I'd say probably 98% of the time, the front feet will follow the hind feet. But the hind feet don't always follow the front feet, if that makes sense. So when you're rising and falling with the one on the wall, say in this case going to the left, you're rising with the front right foot, what you're really doing is you're offloading the left hind foot. When you're rising and you're off the saddle, when you're posting, you are really offloading the left hind foot so that foot can come up under the horse's body. And if you will post that and rise with that diagonal pair going to the left, you will actually be already in sync with the moment of suspension in the canter. And it's hard to explain this on the teleseminar. If I could show it to you, it would be better. But if you can rise with that diagonal pair going to the left, you're rising with the inside hind foot, which matches the outside front, and you're going to the left, you will actually, as you post faster, you can post faster. If you'll stay in that sync, that will also encourage a horse to pick up the left lead going to the left, because you're already in that rhythm if you're posting with that diagonal pair. So as you go along, what's really amazing, I have people do this exercise at the clinics, and they'll be rising and rising, and the horse, you know, doesn't pick up a right lead or doesn't pick up a left lead, and I'll just have them posting, and I'll say, now just post faster. Just keep posting faster. You're kind of posting ahead of the motion. So the horse, again, wants to be in sync with your motion, it's more comfortable for them, and all of a sudden that horse just naturally tips into a canter, and they'll tip into the lead that's most comfortable with the motion you're offering them. And again, you're not in their way, you don't need to do a whole lot with the rings and bending and getting them into position, that it kind of complicates things and it kind of bumbles things up. So that's why little girls with strings on the back of their saddles pick up right leads and left leads, because they're not in the way of the horse. Okay, so that now that's not concentrated. That's not your finished work. When you go into, you know, sometimes people in dressage say, well, you know, the horse needs to arc in the, you know, this, and it's like, we're not talking about that. We're talking about the very basic introduction. What is the physiological dynamic of leads and lead changes? And it originates in the hip. Okay?
Okay. All right. Well, thank you, Karen. That was really informative. So we'll go ahead and move on here. We've got a pretty long email from Lisa out in Virginia Beach, Virginia. And it says, hi, Karen. I bought my first horse, an 8-year-old paint mare, a few months ago. And when I bought her, she was very calm and had a wonderful, slow, smooth Western jog. The owner said she had not been ridden much in the last year because the owner had recently had a baby. Since buying her and moving her to a barn where she is now pasture boarded, she has become much more anxious horse, both on the ground and under saddle. I think she may have been drugged when I went to try her out, and when the vet came out to do the pre-purchase exam, I did not have blood drawn. Anyway, she's got so bad, including rearing when I try to lead her, bucking and twisting and galloping wildly in the round pen, that I seriously considered selling her because I had not a confident round pen. I did not have a confident rider, and the last thing I needed is a green horse. So after doing a lot of groundwork with her, and among other things, I gave her a big mama's bite with my dressage whip. She has straightened up and now seems to respect me, just like you said. In fact, one of my favorite things to do with her now is to walk or run beside her, and she stops and starts and backs up on a dime with my shoulder to shoulder. It's an awesome feeling. My problem is, as soon as I get on her, she becomes very anxious again, and the biggest problem is she does not want to stop. I had her teeth floated right after I bought her, so that's not the problem. The bit I'm using is a very mild Myler snaffle with D-rings, and I'm not heavy-handed at all. I've even tried to ride her with just a rope halter, since she responds so well to that on the ground, and that totally freaked her out. She actually did a small rear under saddle. When I try to circle her after trying to use to stop her with no success, she just seems to circle faster and faster until it feels like she may fall off. It makes us both very nervous. When I have gotten her under control enough to trot her only in the round pen, her trot seems almost frantic instead of that nice slow jog. I have checked my saddle and can slip my hand under it without pinching anywhere, and there is about 2-finger clearance over her withers. How do I get her to stop under saddle and to calm down under saddle and not be so anxious? Thanks so much for doing the teleseminars. They're so very helpful.
Good. Well, it's leadership. It's reestablishing leadership as conditions change. So on the ground, you've got some leadership, but that's the very beginning of leadership. And then you get up on the horse's back, what you have on the ground, you know, it's great that the horse is mirroring and doing all those kinds of things, but it's important to keep progressing, keep advancing and doing things on the ground that will further challenge the horse and further, more deeply establish your leadership on the ground. So it's great to hear what you're doing and you're having some success on the ground, but keep building on that. Don't get stuck. You know, if you keep doing the same thing, the horse was very interested, you know, in the very beginning, but they're very quickly, you know, get bored of those kinds of things too. So keep moving ahead on the ground. And then under saddle, remember, it's take the hindquarters away. And it sounds like you're familiar with the mama's bite, and I'm not sure if that's from the teleseminar or from the videos that you've got, but if it's the same thing up on the horse's back, take the hindquarters away. And if you can't do that in a halter and lead, and believe me, all rope halters and leads are not created equal. They're just not. I see them all the time, and they're made out of all kinds of different materials. There are very few halters that are designed like fiber optics for your horse. So just because it's a halter and lead, or may even be a rope halter and lead, it doesn't necessarily mean it's designed for communication. So, you know, there's some factors in there that I I can't really see him decide, but it's really about taking the horse's hindquarters away. So if you go into a small area, say into a round pen, you know, where is she going to go? And then if you practice on the ground, bending the horse on the ground, throwing the lead line over her head, you know, taking things like tarps and tin cans in a, you know, into a bag or something, you know, it's about furthering that communication all the time. Now, your horse might have been drugged when you bought it. I mean, that's not an uncommon thing to hear. But if you really like the horse and you want, if you're willing to, you know, put the time in, not even just in the horse, but in your developing your own skills. You know, it's just like, you know, what Melinda read at the beginning of this. You get to a point where you say, man, this is too much horse. I'm a green rider. And getting a gentler horse and a more competent horse might be the better answer for you. But if you want to, you know, continue to take this horse through these stages, you may find she does have a good foundation underneath this, and the reason she's confused and fractious and, you know, can't hold her feet still and all those things is because your lack of skill at being able to communicate that to her. So you can hear the thread, the underlying thread, when a horse is in a situation where we don't trust their behavior, in that very moment, if you think about it from the horse's point of view, the reason that's happening is because they don't trust us, because they're unable to understand our communication with them at that moment. So a lot of times we tend to look at the horse and say, well, what's, you know, this behavior of the horse? And the real answer is that, you know, your skill needs to be able to change and adapt to that situation. So the thing I would advise, I don't know when I'm going to be out in that area. I mean, I'm headed out to the Midwest doing this tour here this fall. But if you can't get into a clinic, the videos can really, really help you, because it's not just the ground skills, the riding from the ground, but the riding from above. And that cornerstone for communication, those three little videos are such a wealth of information. And I've seen people take those videos and take the philosophy from it and do the techniques that, not only just the techniques they're seeing in the videos, but they'll take it and keep building on it. And they'll take off with it, and it's just really amazing to me to have such a desire to reach that horse's mind and heart that they will watch those videos, study those videos. There was a gal at a clinic here recently, and I said, you know, Laurel, how many times have you watched those videos? She says, I have no idea. She lost count a long time ago, but she watches them and she watches them again, and every time she watches them, there's something different. So it's not like, okay, well, I'm getting a 60-minute video and that's what I get. You're getting hours and hours and hours of coaching and examples with a variety of horses, you know, from me. So when that horse gets bothered when you're up on the back, you know, you want to. I mean, that's everybody's question. Some people say, well, you know, I don't really want to learn that. I want to, you know, go with an easy horse and a gentle horse. You can do that too. And there's lots of horses out there that you can learn on that be a more suitable horse for a beginning person to learn on. But you may find if you just put a layer of set, just basic skill set, both on the ground and on the horse's back, you may just start reaching into that layer of training and experience that it sounds like the horse might have before you got her. And she may, if you don't have a way, if your skill set is there to communicate that to the horse, of course she's going to get upset. Any horse would get upset because it says, you're not making any sense to me. You're frustrating me. In fact, I have an example where my horses, I raise personally, I have two mares that I personally raised. They've just a dream, as long as can be, as willing, all those things. And I thought, well, I'm not using that much. I'll use in some lessons, have people in some lessons using them. Those mares got so frustrated with the learning stages of people, they started biting people, both of them. They'd never bit anybody in their whole lives. And I thought, well, I can use them for lessons. And these mares got so upset and so angry at these people, because they were going, what is this? These people, they're just not that good, and I need to bite them and tell them how bad they are. So I actually couldn't use them. I had to use my older horses. I called them my old professors. They're both passed away now. But they were my old professors, and were very tolerant of the learning stages of people. So it's not that the horse may not be well trained. That horse may be very well trained. But that's why I don't train horses so much as I train people in how to be able to hold a conversation with a horse. So that would be my advice, you know, before you, you know, get rid of the horse or think she was drugged and need to get a different horse, you know, try it. And if my videos don't work for you, send them back to me. I don't know that everybody offers that, but send them back. If they don't work for you and you say, oh, gosh, that Karen Scholl, she just puts me to sleep on that video or what, send them back to me if it's not working for you. But I can't even tell you how many videos I get back because it always just seems to click and work. And the feedback I get is they see the similarity in techniques, but it's the way I explain it, that you're actually able to go out with your horse and know what to do. That's the track I would take in the beginning to see if you can establish that ability of holding a conversation with that horse.
Okay, Karen, this may be a good time, too, to remind them when they're watching the DVDs that not only just watching them, but then go off and just listen to them and not, you know, see what's on the DVD. You're kind of learning in different stages. But, you know,
right.
That seems to, if you're really busy, just actually getting in the other room and listening. And then all of a sudden you're running back in and, what did she say? You want to see
right.
it again.
Well, yeah. And that's a, something I should advise people to do, too. You can go on the website and go in the DVD section, and there's a little video clip, and I explain to you what DVDs I would recommend to start off with, how to use them, watch them without sound, all of those things. So when you go through the website, there's, I don't know, 16 different video clips of, you know, it explains how the tools are made, how they give you an advantage of communication with your horse, how to use DVDs, when to come to a clinic, how it'll benefit you, all those things. So it's not just a website. You have to read pages and pages and pages through, because I don't care for that when I look through websites. So I have these little, I call it a virtual tour. It's like, hi, here's Karen Scholl in this section, and, you know, I'll get to explain it to you there while you're actually looking at the different things and considering what's going to work best for you and your horse.
We appreciate all the questions that have come in. We do apologize this evening for the technical problem that we're having with the reception. So, but we do appreciate your questions. Please continue to submit those in. We're going to go ahead and wrap up this evening. Thanks for everyone that has submitted their questions in. We're sorry that there was one or two that we didn't get to. Karen, if you're there, we'd like to thank you for taking time out this evening to talk with us and share your insights on these wonderful horses that we have. Okay, evidently we have lost her. So everybody, have a good evening, and we will talk to you next month. It will be October the 14th. Please get your questions in so we can take a look at those and be ready for the seminar. Thanks, and everyone have a good evening. Bye-bye.